This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Welcome to CBS Mornings. I'm Gail King.
I'm Tony DeCoppo.
And I'm Nate Burleson.
But before we start with the news, let's take a look at the 9/11 memorial as we get ready to remember the 20th anniversary. It's all something we remember very well. Unfortunately, it was a terrible, terrible day, and we all remember where we were. We'll be talking about it a lot today. It still gets me. Anytime you have to write the date down, anytime something comes up about it, we will still. 20 years later, it's still very, very painful. We're going to begin with this, though. President Biden's tough tone on the COVID crisis. He has had enough. In a sharply worded speech yesterday, Mr. Biden says vaccine or regular testings will now be required for any company with more than 100 employees. The president spoke directly to the 80 million Americans who are still unvaccinated, saying his patience is wearing very thin. The deaths are rising sharply in this country from the coronavirus. More than 10,000 Americans have died in the last 7 days alone. Nearly all the victims are unvaccinated people. Nancy Cordes is at the White House with the details of the president's plan. Nancy, good morning to you. Boy, the president pulled no punches yesterday.
Right, and big changes are in store, Gail. Good morning. This new order will force millions of federal workers and contractors to get vaccinated with no option for regular testing instead. Also today, fines will be doubled for anyone who is traveling by air if they don't wear their masks. But the real centerpiece here is this sweeping new rule for businesses that employ about a third of the entire U.S. workforce.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
With millions of Americans still unvaccinated, President Biden is taking his toughest stance yet. Now, every company with more than 100 employees will have to require workers to either get vaccinated or get tested weekly.
Some of the biggest companies are already requiring this. United Airlines, Disney, Tyson's Food, and even Fox News.
Businesses that don't comply could face a $14,000 fine per violation. The same goes for any medical facility that gets reimbursed by Medicare and Medicaid.
If you're seeking care at a health facility, you should be able to know that the people treating you are vaccinated. Simple.
Since this summer, when the president declared independence from the virus,
it no longer controls our lives.
Cases have skyrocketed from about 12,000 per day to more than 100,000. But some unions are already balking at the new mandates, one saying the government should trust its employees to make their own medical decision under consultation with their doctor. Some Republican governors and lawmakers called the president's move unconstitutional, and the Republican National Committee is already vowing to sue.
Crimes against humanity!
Meanwhile, Los Angeles County, the nation's second largest school district, voted Thursday to mandate vaccines for students age 12 and up. Biden had his harshest words yet Thursday for Republican governors in states like Florida and Texas, who have tried to block mask mandates in schools.
If these governors won't help us beat the pandemic, I'll use my power as president to get them out of the way.
The president also announced that the federal government is going to be spending billions of dollars to make rapid tests more readily available and cheaper. And he'll be talking about safety in the classroom once again today when he visits a local school here in Washington, D.C. with the Secretary of Education and the First Lady. Nate?
As the cases rise, so should our awareness on what is going on with COVID. Thank you, Nancy, so much. The Department of Justice is suing the state of Texas over its new abortion law. About two dozen clinics have already stopped abortion services. Omar Villafranca has been following this for us. Omar, good morning.
Good morning. The DOJ suit puts constitutionality at the center of the argument. Now, the law, which is also known as SB 8, bans abortion after around 6 weeks, which is before many women even know they are pregnant. And it makes no exception for victims of rape, sexual abuse, or incest. It also puts enforcement in the hands of citizens by allowing anyone to sue people who help women get an abortion, like a doctor or clinical staff or even drivers. Attorney General Merrick Garland argues in the suit that SB 8 infringes on constitutional rights and longstanding court precedent. Now, the Supreme Court recently declined to block the law, but that ruling didn't address its constitutionality, which is what a federal judge will decide in this suit. Texas Governor Greg Abbott did release a statement, and he said, quote, he is confident that the courts will uphold and protect that right to life. Tony?
You know, I think while we've kept
it's a high-stakes legal
safer,
conversation. Omar, thank you very much. Let's go straight to CBS News legal analyst and legal correspondent Jan Crawford, who is at the Supreme Court for us. Jan, good morning to you. What are the chances that the justices have another say on this law?
Well, I mean, Tony, I think it's a question of when and not if they have to take another crack at this. And some of the justices actually acknowledged that when they took a pass the first time, saying that, you know, someone has to actually sue to try to enforce the law before they can take a crack at it. But before it gets to that, there is another major abortion case the justices are going to take up that will affect the Texas law and all these other state laws from Mississippi. Mississippi officials are asking the court to overturn Roe versus Wade to allow their state's ban on abortions after 15 weeks. The justices are going to hear arguments in that case later this fall, a decision sometime next year. The future of Roe versus Wade is in the balance. Tony?
And that's saying a lot. Jan, thank you very much. And Jan will also be sharing a remarkable interview later this hour. It is the first TV interview with the oldest daughter of Jane Roe, who is at the center of the Roe v. Wade case.
In Afghanistan, Kabul's main airport is open to commercial flights once again. Dozens of people, including at least 21 U.S. citizens and green card holders, left on this flight yesterday, but there are new signs of the Taliban clamping down. Charlie Daggett is just over the border in Pakistan. Our cameras captured armed members of the Taliban patrolling the streets right next to people who are desperate to leave. Charlie, good morning.
Good morning. We're at the Torgum crossing with Pakistan on that side, and that is Afghanistan on that side. We got Taliban flags flying high, Taliban members who are now guarding this border crossing. There are hundreds of people who are trying to get out, some in need of urgent medical attention, and they're being stopped, not just by the Taliban, but by Pakistan, who don't want to encourage a huge influx of refugees until there's a coherent international plan in place. Here's just an example of some of the brutality that they're leaving behind. A couple of journalists said they were beaten badly by the Taliban after covering a women's protest. The Taliban have now cracked down on those protests, banning them until further notice. Now, as the Taliban continues to tighten its grip through intimidation, we can expect more people to try to flood to the borders, even though they're being discouraged any way they can to get away from Taliban rule. Nate?
Charlie Daggett in Pakistan, thank you. Tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of 9/11. The Biden administration is reviewing Saudi Arabia's connection to the attacks. 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudi citizens. Holly Williams got rare access to a prison in Saudi Arabia where inmates were convicted of terrorist activity are held. Holly, good morning.
Good morning. The Saudi government has consistently denied any involvement in the 9/11 attacks. But inside a Saudi prison, we heard from inmates convicted on terrorism charges who said their upbringing in an ultra-conservative Islamic kingdom contributed to their radicalization. Saudi officials say they're now fixing the problem.
Yep. So this is one of the rooms.
Yes, this is a room.
We were given a guided tour of Al Hayya prison by one of its inmates. Yasser Essam Hamdi was born a U.S. citizen to Saudi parents in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I remember that going to Disneyland in Florida, I think. It was very nice.
His family moved to Saudi Arabia when he was 5, he told us, and just before the 9/11 attacks, he went to train with the Taliban in Afghanistan, where he was captured by US forces.
I am a young man, a teenager, going with these people. I started to have some extremist practice.
Hamdi renounced his U.S. citizenship and returned to Saudi Arabia a free man, but was later arrested by Saudi authorities.
I don't want to speak about it a lot, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but talking and stuff like that. Because of that, I came back to prison.
Saudi Arabia says it's recently revolutionized this prison, an effort to reform inmates with music, sports, and even a company run by the prisoners themselves, which manufactures perfume,
it's very nice,
and furniture. The prisoners in charge wore business suits during our visit. We were filmed by inmates and accompanied at all times by prison officials. Critics of the Saudi government say political prisoners have also been held here. Saudi officials deny allegations of torture. Several of the inmates described growing up in a closed-off Islamic country, exposed to fundamentalism and the glorification of violence.
Did you ever hear any extremism at a mosque? Did you hear, extremist views at school?
Yeah, of course.
Now Saudi Arabia says it's promoting so-called moderate Islam. Extremist preaching has been banned, and school textbooks that once promoted violence against non-Muslims have been rewritten. Yasser Essam Hamdi told us he'll be released in a year and dreams of somehow reclaiming his U.S. citizenship.
I was an extremist once, but now I am not.
Saudi Arabia's won praise for its efforts to fight terrorism and modernize, but continues to be criticized over its human rights record. Gail.
Holly Williams reporting from Saudi Arabia. Thank you. In the months leading up to 9/11, the CIA sounded the alarm that something was coming. A new CBS News documentary that airs tonight takes us inside the CIA's hunt for al-Qaeda and its then leader, Osama bin Laden. This is a preview.
From April to mid-July of 2001, there was a significant increase in intelligence reporting about al-Qaeda planning attacks. Catastrophic attacks. Multiple simultaneous attacks. History-changing attacks.
We'd seen chatter before other operations. But they started using language we had never heard before. They were calling it Olympic-sized. Armageddon.
There were real plots being manifested. The world felt like it was on the edge of eruption.
It's early this Tuesday morning, the 11th of September, 2001.
From the heart of New York City.
The first job of any government is to protect the country and protect its people. But you don't get credit for what you stopped if you don't stop them all. And we were unable to stop the big one.
For us, there was a personal dimension in this. Three 3,000 Americans had been killed. The city I grew up in had been blown up. There was an emotional piece of this because we had woken up every day of our lives trying to stop what just had happened.
It's still so emotional. We're joined now by former acting and deputy CIA director Michael Morell, whom you saw in that clip 20 years ago. He served as the CIA's presidential daily briefer and was with President George W. Bush on 9/11. He is now CBS News senior national security contributor and joins us at the table. Mike, it's good to see you.
Great to see you.
You know, I'd forgotten that you were with the president that day and you were there at that school because we didn't even know what we were looking at. But here's the question. You're the perfect person to be here today because your knowledge is so vast. And the question is, do you think we're safer today than we were back then?
We are
absolutely safer today than we were back then, Gail, for two reasons. One is immediately after 9/11, we increased our defenses. So it is much more difficult for terrorists to get into the United States. It's much more difficult for them to move money. It's much more difficult for anybody to hijack an aircraft. Mm-hmm. The second thing we did is we took the fight to them overseas. So wherever we could find them, whether they were in Afghanistan, whether they were in Pakistan, whether they were in Yemen, we took the fight to them and degraded them so that they didn't have the capability anymore to attack us. So, and we've done that consistently since 9/11.
But now the Taliban's in control in Afghanistan. That's why I asked the question, do you think we're safer? Because for a lot of people, it seems like we're right back where we started.
Right.
Do you think that it's possible that Al-Qaeda could reemerge?
Yes. And whether that happens depends entirely on us. So I told President Bush on 9/11 that I was highly confident that what just happened was the result of bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. I'm here to tell you today that I am highly confident that the Taliban will allow Al-Qaeda to have safe haven in Afghanistan, and Al-Qaeda will want to reconstitute. So the question is, will we allow that? Will we have the intelligence capabilities to watch them, to see what they're doing, look at their plans and intentions, look at their capabilities, and then will we have the military capability to go in there and degrade them if we need to? And will we have the will to do that? If we do that, they won't be a threat. If we don't, they could be a threat within 12 months.
Do you consider Al-Qaeda and the situation in Afghanistan to be the single biggest threat facing America today?
So, not right now. Right, I worry about Al-Shabaab in Somalia. I worry about ISIS in North Africa. I worry about domestic terrorism here. But if we don't do what we need to do in Afghanistan, it will become the single biggest threat again.
What will be the legacy of our war in Afghanistan?
So I think about it as, what's the legacy of the entire war on terror, right? And I think there's two pieces to it. One is, we have protected the homeland since 9/11. There hasn't been another 9/11. We all worked very hard to make sure that that didn't happen. That's fantastic. That's success, right? We won that war. But at the same time, I think we've weakened America a little bit. Mm. Because for those 20 years that we were fighting a counterterrorism war and a counterinsurgency war, the Russians and the Chinese were catching up to us conventionally. And some of the things we did post 9/11, the war in Iraq, for example, caused political division here at home, right, that we're still paying for.
Right.
All right, Michael Morell, you have the last word on that. Thank you very much for joining us today. Race Against Time, the CIA and 9/11, a production of our very own See It Now Studios, airs tonight at 8, 7 Central, right here on CBS. And it's available tomorrow on the Viacom CBS streaming service, Paramount Plus.
I'm CBS News correspondent Major Garrett, host of the podcast Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen. During the Cold War, FBI agent Robert Hansen traded classified secrets to the Kremlin in exchange for cash and jewels. In the podcast, you'll hear from Hansen's closest friends, family members, victims, and colleagues for the most comprehensive telling of who Robert Hansen really was. Binge the entire series now. Agent of Betrayal, The Double Life of Robert Hansen is available on the Wondery app, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.